Okay, we're on 698. Let's see. We are on page Yud Aleph. Perikof Hei, Pasuk Yud Aleph, page 698. You weren't even there last week. You don't have any right to say anything.
I came without shaming.
You didn't. Yeah, today. Last week you didn't come. People that didn't come last week have no say in this week's class. I make them. This is called a dictatorship. Okay. 698, Pasuk Yud Aleph. We're middle of the Dinam of Yovel. Last week we discussed at great length the concept of 49 versus 50. 49 is the Aved of the Jew, 50 is the gift from above that comes after the 49, and it's a level that we cannot reach on our own, but Hashem gives it to us after we do our part. So basically the Torah is describing the din of Yovel. So far the Torah says two things. It's like Shemitah, no planting, no cultivating the field, nothing like that. Secondly, slaves go free and land goes back to the original owner of what it was before the Yovel. So now the pasuk continues and says, Ki Yovel hi, because it's Yovel, Kedesh ti Elohim, it should be holy. Min asoda teichlu as tavasa, from the field, you can eat the grain, meaning, as long as there is food in the field for people and animals, everybody has a right to eat from it. But once that stops, nobody has the right. Basically, again, the concept is, in this respect, Yovel is like Shemitah. The fields are ownerless, so to speak. They belong completely to Hashem. And therefore, the grain is free for all, hefker, and everything like that. Now, Kedesh, we said, also means that if you exchange the Yovel produce for something else, that money has to be dealt with only like the produce itself would be dealt with Kedusha Shemit and so on. Okay, now it says like this. B'shenasa Yovel Azeis, okay, in the year of Yovel, Toshuvu Isha L'Achuzasei, each person goes back to where the ancestral heritage, meaning every person goes back, if they were a slave, they go out free, everything goes back to the way it was. Okay, this is the term finalizing, so to speak, with the concept of Yovel. Now, the Torah says like this. The Torah is going to give a general pasuk, by the way, that is applies to every aspect of business in the Torah, even though the Torah is speaking basically about the Yovel year, as we'll learn, but this is a general pasuk for all aspects of cheating in business. The pasuk says like this, V'chisimkru mimko l'amisecho. When you will make a sale to your friend, a ikona miyad amisecho, or you acquire it from his hand, alteinu ish asochiv, you're not allowed to defraud your brother. Okay? Now, the Gemara learns out, it doesn't only mean brother Jew versus non-Jew, that a non-Jew you could cheat. There's no difference between Jew and non-Jew as far as cheating goes. The only difference is, halachically, if they make a mistake, do you have to tell them about the mistake or not? But as far as actively defrauding somebody, there's no difference whether it's a Jew or non-Jew, it's always forbidden. Now, basically, why does the Torah then say, Kisimkur mimko lamisecha. Lamisecha means to your fellow. Okay? In fact, the Gemara learns the word amisecha is really two words. Am she'itcha. The nation with you. With you in Torah and Mitzvahs. Which means, according to Halacha, the Gemara learns out, that when you do business, I know people don't like doing this, but when you do business, it's preferable to do business with a Jew. I know people usually don't like doing business with Jews. But The halacha is that your preference, that's why the Torah says, ki simkru mimkor la'amisecho, la'amisecho again is am she'itcho, the nation with you, or kona miyada misecho, you should try to make a purchase, do business with your fellow Jew. Okay? Why? Because then you're helping your brothers in the best way possible. And in fact, the halacha is that the biggest level of tzedakah, the Rambam writes this in the laws of tzedakah, the biggest mitzvah of tzedakah is when somebody is having a hard time in business, like they're slipping, and you get them back on their feet, that is the highest form of tzedakah. Because you're actually them, it's like, what's the English expression? When you fish somebody, we would fish with somebody, you give them food for the day. When you teach them how to fish, you give them food for life. Because they learn how to do it. So the thing is, it's preferred to do mitzvahs. Now, another thing the Hasidic masters would say, "Al teinu isha sochiv," means don't trick somebody. And they say the Torah is referring not to fool ourselves. That's what the Hasidic masters say over here. "Al teinu isha sochiv," because a Jew is also a Jew. You know, the person himself is also a Jew. A Jew should not fool another Jew. Included in that, a Jew should never fool himself. Meaning, when a Jew is making a personal reckoning, not talking about cheating yourself in business, that's obviously ridiculous. But it means, when a Jew is making a reckoning, a cheshbon, they shouldn't fool themselves. You shouldn't overcharge, and you shouldn't undercharge. What does it mean in a spiritual sense? When a person makes a cheshbon and nefesh, a reckoning, like the end of the day, the end of the week, the end of the month, because there are times in halacha when halacha says you're supposed to make a self-reckoning. A person should not defraud themselves, meaning you shouldn't think you're better than you are, and equally important, you shouldn't think you're worse than you are. You shouldn't think you're better, and you shouldn't think you're worse, because both are defrauding. Both is cheating. A person needs to know. In fact, there's a Chassidic song that he sings in Yiddish. The Welt is a smaller brick. The world is a small bridge. Und der Iker ist nicht zu narren sich. And the main thing is don't fool yourself. Fooling yourself is anti-Torah and definitely anti-Chassidic, because Chassidic says like this. If a person thinks they're better than they are, that's for sure no good. But even when you think you're worse than you are, it's also no good. Because it says, just like a person needs to know their faults, they need to know their greatnesses. They need to know their talents. Because if Hashem blessed somebody with a certain ability, and they don't utilize that ability to the fullest because they think, I'm no good, then you're destroying and ruining and wasting something that Hashem made. And this is also connected to this very interesting Gemara, which is brought down in many places. Rabbi Yechinen, the famous Rabbi Yechinen of the Gemara, when he was on his deathbed, and his students came into him, and they saw him crying. Now normally tzaddikim are not afraid to pass away, because they know where they're going, you know. So Rabbi Yechinen, on his deathbed, his students come in, and he's crying. So they say to him, Rebbe, they start giving all the titles, because Rabbi Yechinen, the Gemara says how great he was. He never walked four amos without learning, and this, I mean, he was a holy of holies. So they said, with all the titles of the game, they said, are you afraid to go? I mean, what are you afraid of? You're only going in one place. So he said to them, I see two paths before me, Gan Eden and Gehenem. And I don't know where that's leading me. This is what the Gemara says. In Gemara Brachas. He says, I'm dying, I see two paths, Gan Eden, Gehenim, and I don't know where they're taking me. So Chassidus asked the question, what do you mean Rabbi Yechinen didn't know where he was going? What was he knew exactly who he was. These people knew who they were. They wouldn't fool themselves. So it says a very interesting concept. It says that when a person has business, Yeah? You run a business. So during business hours, you don't sit down and make a cheshbon of how much money came in and how much money goes out. Why? Because then you're not going to run your business. During business hours, you need to run the business. You don't think the ins and outs of the money. At the end of the day, you close shop. Or let's see, daily, weekly, whatever it is. At the end of the day, you sit down and make a cheshbon on nefesh. You know, how much money came in, how much money went up. Rabbi Yochanan, his whole life, said, now the business is open. I don't have time during my life to make a cheshbon because I could be doing mitzvahs meanwhile. I'm going to sit there and make a reckoning, so when am I going to do my mitzvahs? It's a shame to waste the time. So Rabbi Yochanan's whole life was working. Now at the end of his life, if he doesn't do it now, when is he going to be able to do it? So Rabbi Yochanan had to sit down. He was forced to make a reckoning. And he said, I don't know where I'm going to. What does it mean, he doesn't know where I'm going to? Based on what he should have been, or what he was, not that Rabbi Yochanan, God forbid, sinned, but he didn't know compared to what he should have been, if he really was the level that he should have been. See, they say, Alteinu Isha Sochiv, a person is not, it's criminal. In Chassidus it says it's criminal, it's a criminal offense for a person to defraud themselves to make themselves better or worse than they really are. Okay? But this is what the Pasuk here is saying, generally in business. Chisimkru mimkru l'misecha, oikonu miyad amisecha, you acquire it miyad from the hand of amisecha, alteinu isha sochiv, you're not allowed to fall. Those that come to the Gemara Shir Tuesday night, which is not the women, but we're learning from this Pasuk, the Gemara also learns the various acquisitions of metaltalin, of tangible items, the way you actually acquire it, miyad hamisecha, from the hand of the friend, either giving it to you, picking it up, or drugging it, or something like that. The Gemara learns out the various acquisitions of how a person can acquire tangible items. But it says like this, according to Halacha, and there's a whole issue why it's not done today, but there's a din in the Torah, from this Pasuk, the Gemara learns out what's called the din of Eino. Eino means you're not allowed to cheat somebody in business. Meaning, if you charge them, overcharge, less than a sixth, the deal stays a deal, and the money is forgiven. If you cheat somebody, overcharge him a sixth, exactly a sixth, the deal stays a deal, but you have to give him back the money that you overcharged him. If it's more than a sixth, the deal's off. Retroactively, the deal's off. But there's a lot of details in this din. I mean, it's a very complicated din in Shulchan Aruch and the Gemara about, you know, if you tell the guy, listen, this is what I paid for, this is what I'm making on it, you know, so then it's a different story. But otherwise, by certain tangible items, by land, there's no din of Eino. By land, there's no such thing as overcharging or undercharging. By slaves, there's no such thing as overcharging or undercharging. But by regular tangible items, there's a whole section in Shulchan Aruch called the laws of Eino, meaning hurting somebody in business, defrauding them in business. So certain times the deal is off, certain times the deal stays a deal, but you have to pay back the extra. And certain times the deal stays and you don't have to pay back the extra, depending on how much you actually cheated the person financially. Today, in today's world, everybody knows that you have a market of 100%, or 200%, or 300%. So this is like, it's automatically understood that that's the way business is done. So that's why today, you don't have this concept of marking up goods only a sixth. I mean, nobody marks up goods today a sixth. It's either 100%, 200%, whatever it may be, from the various different prices. Can you lend me some money? This is great.
What's the question?
The question was, if a Jew owes you money, do you just have to forget it, or can you ask him for it?
Do you have to ask him?
There's a pasuk in Mishpatim that says you shouldn't go to the house. There is a din, and if you know he doesn't have money, you're not allowed to walk by him, you're not allowed to bug him. But there's a difference between not being able to pay or not wanting to pay. It's a lot of complicated issues.
question.
What?
Hona also has delivered services or goods only?
Officially it's goods, but we'll soon learn there's another din of Hona that we'll come to in a second. There's another pasuk coming up. So basically, you're not allowed to cheat somebody in business. What does this pasuk have to do here? We're in the middle of Yovel, because the Torah is speaking about the law of Yovel. B'mispah shonim achar ha-Yovel, for the amount of time after Yovel, tikna mi'esa misacha, that how much you should buy for it from your friend. B'mispah shnei tfuy simkoloch, he basically selling you the crop years is what he's selling you. Simply what the pasuk means, we'll soon see why the pasuk doesn't say it straight. The pasuk is saying basically, we learned in the past, but here's the pasuk is saying it. By Yovel, you don't sell the land, because there's no permanent sale. By Yovel, the land goes back to the original owner. What are you basically selling when you sell the land? How many crops the person will have until Yovel? So you're basically leasing the land and the crops until the next Yovel. So if you have 49 years left to Yovel, the price is going to be more than if you have 10 years left to Yovel. Because here you have 10 years and here you have 49 years. But that's what the pasuk is saying. But the Torah uses an interesting word. First of all, why does the Torah say, b'mispah shanim achar ha-Yovel? It's not the amount of years after Yovel. It's the amount of years to the next Yovel. Right? What are you selling? How many years to the next Yovel? So it should say, b'mispah shanim lifnei ha-Yovel. Not after Yovel, before Yovel. Why is the Torah using the word achar ha-Yovel? So it says like this. The Gemara learns from here, by the way, the fact that it says in the next pasuk, Shnei tvu'ais yimkoloch, years, shnei doesn't mean two, years of grain he's selling you. And it says, lefi rev hashanim, plural. Okay? The Gemara learns that minimal sale is for 2 years. 2 years and two crops. That means if somebody has three crops in 1 year, it's still not a sale. Which means, the pasuk is saying like this. If you sell a land a year before Yovel, okay, there's 1 year left to Yovel, the guy has the land automatically for 2 years. The year before Yovel, and 1 year after Yovel. Okay? Because you can't sell, this is what this pasuk is teaching us. You can't sell land for less than 2 years. In this Yovel story. Therefore, if there's less than 1 year left, I mean there's 1 year, there's automatically effective for the next year. Yovel, there's nothing going in anyway. So if you sell the land in the 49th year, you have to sell for the 49th year and for the 51st year. And that's why the Torah says, achar ha-Yovel, to teach us that sometimes you get the land even after Yovel. You get it back. If it was only sold for less than 2 years before Yovel, so then achar ha-Yovel, you're going to get back the land for another year.
The 49 is Shemitah.
Huh?
The 49 is Shemitah, so maybe 48 or 49.
No, 49 you can still land in Shemitah. You're right. You're right. You don't have to be that way. Not only that, what happens if you sell land and there was a drought and there was no crop that year? The Gemara says you have to wait for two crops until you get the field back. It might take 3 years. It might even take 4 years. But you need two things. Minimum of 2 years and two crops. If it's 1 year and three crops, it's still no good. You need a second year.
If you sell in 47, is that to be 48 and 51?
Why? The truth is, during Shemitah year, you could still have stuff that grew from before. I don't know if the guy sells it with...
It's not yours.
It doesn't matter. You still can have a crop with it. I don't know. I'm not sure.
Robin?
Yeah.
When was the first time Jews kept Yovel in his
country? When they came to Eretz Yisrael.
How long after they came? After the Arab
Emirates? 50 years.
But it took them some time to get Israel.
Yeah. After they conquered the land and divided the land, that's when the Shemitah began and the Evil began. So it's seven Shemitah, the Shemitah, and then seven Shemitahs, and then Evil. Okay. Now is another pasuk, seemingly a repetition of the earlier pasuk. V'leiseinu ishes amisei, you should not aggrieve one another. Before it also uses the same expression, alteinu isha sachiv, okay? But here it says, leiseinu isha samisei, you're not allowed to aggrieve one another, and we'll soon see like this means, it doesn't refer to business, is what's called a noaz dvarim. And this is a very interesting halacha concept that I want to spend a few minutes, because it's something that really needs to be taught, so to speak. It says in halacha like this, they learn out from this pasuk, I'm going to read from Shulchan Aruch a little bit. Just like this cheating in business, kach einoz devarim. You're not allowed to cheat somebody with words. I don't mean cheating them in words, hurting somebody in words. Just like cheating in business, you hurt them, you're not allowed to hurt somebody with words. And it says, and not only that, the Torah adds over here the word v'yoreisem elokecha. By the business, the Torah just says alteinu isha sachiv. In the previous pasuk, yudalid, the Torah concludes, don't cheat your friend. It doesn't say fear God. Here the Torah says alteinu isha sachiv. You're not allowed to hurt your amisei. And then the pasuk says v'yoreisem elokecha. You should fear God. Ki'an Hashem elokechem. Rashi says in many places in Chumash, it is brought down in Halacha. Why by certain mitzvahs does the Torah say, V'yoreisem elokecha? We have Lamash, we learned before in Pashas Kadeshim. Lifnei iver leisitein michshol, before a blind man don't put a stumbling block, V'yoreisem elokecha. And what is included in that mitzvah, by the way? Not only physically putting a stumbling block in front of a blind person, not give bad advice, not the things like that. So a guy can come along and say, what do you mean? I thought I was giving good advice. You know, I thought I really meant well. Over there the pasuk says, God knows what you thought. V'yoreisem elokecha, fear God. In business you can't say, I didn't think I was cheating him. The figures are clear. When it comes to things of the mouth, things of the heart, a person can come along and say, no, I thought I was giving good advice. I didn't know the person was blind. I didn't know. God says, listen, I know what you're thinking. V'yoreisem elokecha, fear God, because I know what's really going on. By Noaz Devarim, over here, the Torah over here adds, V'yoreisem elokecha, because the Torah wants to tell us that don't come along and say that you didn't mean it. And he says like this, V'gedele is from the Gemara, it's a Mishnah. G'dele einoaz devarim me'einoaz momen. Hurting somebody with words is worse than cheating them with money. Why? Halacha says like this, Shezu nitna lehishoven, money you can give back. You know, I stole money, I can give it back. So you get back your money. Vezu lenitna lehishoven, this you can never take back. Zu b'mameine, this you steal his money. Vezu b'gufei, when you hurt somebody with words, you're hurting their body, not their property. And his Gemara says like this, Hatzayek aleinoz dvarim, a person that cries out to God because somebody hurt them verbally, it's called verbal abuse. Nene miyad, Hashem answers him right away. Fishi tzara lev, because it's pain of the heart. V'karev laheded demoyis, and it's close to cause a person to cry. And God always hears when people cry. Okay, so then it gives a number of examples. But I'm reading them now, so I'll tell you Shulchan Aruch. Why? Well, just the Gemara says, it's all these dinim and nobody argues on. He says, for instance, a guy says, to show the extent of it, business people ask him to sell him something. And he has a competitor that he wants to make fun of. So he says, you know, why don't you go to him to buy it? And you know that he doesn't have it. You know that he doesn't have it. So what are you doing it? That they should come and ask him and he should get insulted. That's called Inoz Dvarim. Or you shouldn't say to your friend, okay, and this is also, we learned in Gnevis Das, but this also, L'yem elechaveri, b'kama timka chayfitze, how much are you going to sell me this for? So you're giving the guy hopes that, oh, I'll be able to make some money and sell it to you. V'ayna chayfitz l'knesei, you're not interested in buying it, you don't have the money, you just want to give, let the guy's hopes up high. You know, build his hopes high, and then you're not interested in doing that. Number one, halacha says a gnev is das also, but it's also called einoz dvarim. And then he gives, there's a bunch of examples over here. Now, for instance, the Rambam says this, Gemara says this, you're not allowed to come over to a Baal Tshuva and say, ah, do you remember when you weren't religious? If you do that, it's a lav of the Torah of einoz dvarim. You're not allowed to come to a ged. Okay? If it says, if you do this to a convict, you say to the guy, you know, you used to be a goy, and then you get three sins. One for every Jew and one for a ged. It's a leisena, leisenu, leisena ishis amisa. Three lavs if you do it to a regular, to a ged. Then it says, if you hurt somebody by calling him a nickname, call him a nickname. He says, even if he's used to the nickname already, because everybody calls him this disgusting nickname, they call him a nickname, and he's not even embarrassed from it. He's used to it already. If your intention of calling him that is to embarrass him, it's einoz dvarim. And if you embarrass him publicly, ein lo chelek l'olam haba. You have no chelek in olam haba. And even not in front of him, it says, it's also fim lashon hara. And he says, okay, you shouldn't embarrass somebody. And the Gemara says like this, even if you're doing something good, even if you're doing something good, you have to go out of your way not to embarrass him. And the Gemara tells a story, it doesn't bring up, I'm pretty sure it's Marukv in the Gemara. It says, he used to give to a very prominent person who was very poor. He used to bring him every day a bundle of money. He used to come to the house, push the door open, throw the money in, and it would run away. That the person shouldn't see who gave him the money, that he shouldn't get embarrassed. So at came the time, a person wanted to see who's giving me this money every day. So they were ready for action. And it says that they chased him. And he didn't want to be get caught. He ran into a furnace. He ran into a fire. Hashem made a miracle. He didn't get burnt. But he didn't know that. Because this is the Gemara. The Gemara says it's better to be thrown into Kifshin Aish. Nerech lo'adam lahapal asatzmin l'kifshin Aish. V'al yislabin p'nei chaveri berabim. We learned this out from Tamar and Yehuda. When you know the whole story, Yehuda and Tamar, so Yehuda said, take her out and burn her. So she didn't say, hey, I'm pregnant from you. She said, I'm pregnant from the guy that owns the stick. Right? Why? Because she didn't want to embarrass Yehuda. Even though she was willing, actually willing to be thrown into a furnace and get killed, not to embarrass somebody publicly. So even though this person, Marukva, was doing something good, he was giving tzedakah to the guy. Mamish, everything good. He was ready to not to embarrass the person that hurt him, or he knows dvonim, or he knows action, whatever. He was willing to burn himself in the fire not to get hurt. What?
A lot of times people can just hi-bye conversation will go.
What?
In hi, just hello, you know, hello, hi-bye conversation. They'll say something like, hi tzadik to somebody. And I think people are embarrassed of that a lot of times. Is that something that should be...
How could you be embarrassed with something that the Mishnah says, pasik va'amech kulam tzadikim? The Torah says, "Va'amech kulam tzaddikim."
But we know we're not
tzaddikim. "Va'amech kulam tzaddikim." You have a problem with the pasuk? Deal with the pasuk. But the bottom line is, the pasuk. No, Va'amir kulam tzaddikim does not mean potential. Va'amir kulam tzaddikim. Huh?
No,
but people say it nicely,
like,
but I know
people feel like, you know, they... The
intention thing. Okay, anyway. I have a
question. What? If somebody is embarrassed, somebody will give money, he will not run after somebody to see who give it to him. Because he don't have, it was not need to run away.
Okay, but he wanted to see, but he didn't want the person to get embarrassed, so he ran away. Now, now, Noah's Devarim, okay, basically applies al pidin to a Jew, because it says that's a misai, but nevertheless it says you shouldn't do it to non-Jewish people either. Okay, so basically, all these things, when you admonish somebody, you can't do it in public, all these things are all learned out from this one pasuk that we just learned, al seinu isha sochiv. I mean, l'seinu isha samisai. Before it speaks about cheating in business, and then there's a very interesting, this is for the women. The women are going to like this one. V'tzarech, there's also Gemara. It says like this, V'tzarech lizor ma'ed beim noas ishtei. You have to be very careful not to hurt your wife, verbal. Shalei letzare bedvarim. You shouldn't abuse your wife verbally. No. Shemiterech shemidaitam, I don't let my wife see it either. Shemiterech shedemasim etzuyo, because her tears are common. Einosam amaher lovei, her torture, her insult, I mean her abuse becomes quicker. Then it says, la'elam yehei adam zor bekveid ishtei. A person should be very careful in the respect of his wife. Shem bracha metzuyah beveise shel adam, because the bracha is not found in the house of a man, ele bishvil ishtei, only because of his wife. So the bracha in the house comes because of the wife. V'kach amru chachamin lebnei der, and this is all the Gemara, by the way. So the chacham said to the people of their generation, kabdu es neshisechem, ani your wives, kadei she tesashi, you should get rich. That's all. Huh?
The men don't like this. The
I didn't say the women don't like it. I said women like this one. Oh, okay. Okay. Anyway, that's what this concept is. So anytime, basically, you as everybody knows, by the way, verbal abuse is much worse many times than physical abuse. But that's what the Shulchan Aruch is saying. Here you're hurting the body. Here you're hurting their money. Here you're hurting, you know, it's permanent damage. Okay. So the pasuk, this is what the pasuk says. So a person can come along and say, you know, maybe I didn't mean it, and so on and so forth. The Torah says, Yereisim elakecha, God knows exactly what you're doing, and so on and so forth. Okay, next pasuk, Yitches. Vasisem eschukaisai, the pasuk says, you should keep my statutes. Ves mishpatei tishmiru, and my mishpatim you should do. Vasisem esem, you should do it. Now, there's two, but the Torah is using two terms. Okay, the Torah is using eschukaisai, vasisem eschukaisai, ves mitzvaisi mishpati tishmiru. Okay, what does it mean, the chukim and the mishpatim? Chukim are illogical, mishpatim are logical. So it says, the laws of yovel are chukim. The whole concept of yovel, why slaves go back, what business, you know, that doesn't make sense. As far as not cheating somebody in business or not hurting somebody verbally, that the Torah says is mishpatim, that's logical. To steal in business, that's logical mitzvahs. So over here the Mefarshim, the Ramban says, what is the Torah using the double expression? Vasithem es chukai, say that refers to the laws of yovel, the returning and the no working and all that. Ves mishpatei tishmiru vasisem esam, and the mitzvahs you should do and keep them, the logical mitzvahs. Then the Torah says, if you do it, vishatam alo eretz betach, ilus elevetach, then you will dwell securely on the land. It says that because of the avedus of yovel, like we learned, we mentioned the Rashi in the past, that because of the 70 shmitas that the Jews didn't keep, they were exiled from Eretz Yisrael for 70 years. So basically, Hashem says very simple. You want the land, treat it properly. You're not going to treat it properly, you're not going to get the land. Like parents tell kids, you take care of your toys, you'll have them. You don't take care of your toys, I take him away. Hashem says, you keep the Shemitah laws, you keep the Yovel laws, you keep these agricultural mitzvahs, so me the connected me, the deed for deed, I'll give you the land. You don't, I'm not going to give you the land. That's all. Very simple. Then the Pasuk says like this, V'nasna ha'aretz piya, then also, V'nasna ha'aretz piya, the earth will give its fruit, V'achautam la'seva, and you will eat to be full. Now, there's two different things over here. The Torah says, V'nasna ha'aretz piya, you're going to have an abundance of fruit, and then the Torah adds, V'achautam la'seva. Meaning, even the little that you eat will fill you up. Sometimes you can have a lot of grain, but you're so hungry you keep eating, so you're still. Here the Torah says a double bracha. Number one, you're going to have an abundance, but then also v'achaltam l'seiva is going to stay in your stomach. Okay? Now, the Mefarshim ask, why is that a bracha? Why doesn't Hashem just give an abundance of food and then it will be good? You know, why does Hashem give a bracha that the little bit that you eat will be a bracha? So they write like this. People that have excessive habits are never secure. And that's why the Pasuk finishes off over here, V'ishatam levetach aleh, you will dwell securely in the land. Sometimes a person can have too much and they don't know what to do with it. They're never happy. They're never secure. Hashem says, I'm going to give you a bracha that even the little bit that you have, you're going to be content with. In other words, number one, actually, like he writes, like the man, right? What was the uniqueness of the man? Everybody got the same amount. Adults were satisfied with it. Kids were satisfied with it. It was a bracha in the man that no matter how much of it you ate, you were full. Big stomachs, little stomachs, whatever it was. The same thing it says in the bracha is that people will not gorge themselves, not overdo it, and they'll be satisfied.
We lost that bracha.
We lost it because we want to lose it.
There's no yofim, that's why.
There's no yofim. You know, we just learned last week in Pirkei Avos, is our Asher Sameach B'chalkei? No, that's 2 weeks ago. Not this week. Ezo Asher Sameach B'chalkei. A person who is content with what they have, that is considered wealthy. Except in spiritual needs. Spiritual needs, you should never be happy with what we have. In fact, we mentioned many times, usually the way human nature is very interesting. The whole purpose is to work on a human nature to change it. You know, we have to change the teva of the midas of hativim, we have to change the nature of the midas. People are born very selfish, self-centered, me. Okay, that's what it's all about. And the whole aveda of what Hashem gave us in Torah mitzvahs is to change that. Usually when you speak to people, when it comes to spiritual things, you know, tell them, why don't you grow spiritually? Their answer is, well, that guy doesn't, why do I have to? Right? If they don't come to shul every day, why do I have to come to shul every day? Right? Or they don't go to learn, why do I have to go to learn? Okay. When it comes to physical things, everybody says, well, if they have it, I also want it. You know, they have this, then I also want it. So that's the way it works. Spiritual things, you say, the other guy doesn't want it, doesn't have it, why do I need it? So there's a pasuk we say, it's a chumash, but we say it every day in Aleinu. V'yadayta Hashem, v'yadayta Hayayim, shenot erev, ha'shveitza levach putiyart, k'ashem olikim. It says like this, b'shamayim imal, in the heavens above, v'ala aretz mitochas, in the earth below, there's nobody but Hashem. So there's an interesting taich of that pasuk like this. Bashamayim, in the heavens, when it comes to heavenly things, mimal, look up. They do more, I want to do more. Ba'aretz, in earthly things, mitachas, look at the person below you. If they don't have it, I don't need it either. The opposite of what people do. In the spiritual thing, they look below them. Physical, they look above them. So the pasuk says, "V'yadai ta'ayim v'shevei t'levach." You need to know b'shemayim, in heavenly things, look up. Ba'aretz, look below. There is a medrash in Kehelis. The medrash says, very famous medrash, "Mi sheyesh leimana reitza masayim. Mi sheyesh lo masayim reitza arba meiros." If you have 100, you want 200. You have 200, you want 400. Okay? Another Gemara says, "Ein od the meis v'chatzi tavase v'yodei." A person doesn't die with even half of their lusts fulfilled. Okay? So basically, the Medrash is telling us that as much as we have, we always want more. We're never happy with what we have. We're never v'chautam l'seiva. You know? By the way, it's another interesting thing. It says here, you should eat to be full. You shouldn't eat to stuff yourself. It's another thing they learn out from here. But it says, the nature of people is whatever they have, they want more. You find the interesting thing, people make money, they have plenty of money to live for the rest of their life, yeah, and for the kids and everything, and yet they're always doing things to try to make, what for what? They have enough money, but they're going kumashuga, trying to make more money. But this is the nature of people. One second. The Medrash is not saying it, by the way, as a compliment. Necessarily. The Medrash is saying this is the facts of life. The Torah teaches a Jew, Eizel Ashir, if you want to be really a rich man, you need to be content. Wealth is when you're content. You can have billions of dollars, if you're not content, and we learned, the Rebbe gave the classic example of Howard Hughes. He was a very, very wealthy man, but at the end of his life, he lived like a mishugana because he was afraid. He didn't let people cut his hair. He thought they were going to kill him, and he didn't let cut the nail. I mean, he lived in seclusion because he got to his head that people are going to kill him. So he had billions of dollars, but he had no life. Okay? But
you said you always have to do the effort.
One minute. But the Rebbe learns a very interesting interpretation of this Medrash, in a spiritual way. L'cha'era, the obvious, we've discussed this in the past. Why did it need a Medrash to tell me, you know, when Torah teaches us things, the Torah doesn't have to tell us simple things that everybody knows. Obviously, if Torah teaches something, there's a much deeper significance to what the Torah is teaching us than what the simple eye sees. Okay? Why do I need a Medrash to tell me that if I have 100, I want 200? We all know that. Ask anybody in the street, they'll tell you. I have one, I want two. You have two, they want four. Like, what is the Medrash telling us? So the Rebbe turns around the Medrash. And the Rebbe said, you know what the Medrash really is saying? That if you're a person that doesn't want two, that means you don't even have one. There's a complete opposite way of learning the Medrash. The Medrash says, you have one, you want two. So what is the Medrash telling you? If you have one, then you want two. That means if you don't want two, you don't even have one. That's what the Medrash is saying. What is the Rebbe says is a phenomenal explanation. What does it mean? A person that doesn't want more Yiddishkeit has no Yiddishkeit. Because what does the Medrash say? The Medrash says, if you have one, you want two. You have two, you want four. So the Medrash basically is telling you, if you're somebody that doesn't want two, there's only one explanation of it, because you don't have one. If you don't want four, there's only one explanation, because you didn't have two. So what does it mean in a spiritual sense of Yiddishkeit? A person that doesn't want to grow, they don't want two, that means they don't even have one. And that's the much more powerful way of this, of telling what the Medrash is teaching us than just telling you have one, what? Yes, sir.
I understand the extreme, the Howard Hughes extreme, but in a positive way.
You raised your hand before I said Howard Hughes, so that couldn't be your question.
No, but it was part of that.
Yeah.
Isn't it very important that, I mean, the Rambam says the highest level of tzedakah is to give a person parnasah, give a person a job. So people So there's many people who have this positive desire to grow their business, do more, and they're helping other people by...
Oh, that's a different story.
They're open, giving jobs, they're doing more
business. I'm not talking about intent. I'm talking about people that want it for themselves only. There was a rich guy that went into the Rebbe many years ago, and he had a lot of money. And he said to the Rebbe, you know what? I don't need money anymore. I don't need to work. I want to retire. So the Rebbe said to him, the Rebbe was anti-retirement. The Rebbe said to him, go back to work. I need your money. Well, you might not need your money, but I need your money for tzedakah. So go make money. Give me money. Don't tell me you don't need money. You know, I need the money for tzedakah. Instead, it depends what you're doing it for. If you're doing it to be able to help people, of course. We're talking about the meaning, the purpose of it. You know what I mean? And the contrary, if a person wants to work because they don't want to retire and go meshuga when you retire, yeah, that's a good aspect. But if I'm talking about just for the money, at the expense of family, at the expense of friends, at the expense of everything, that's a whole different story. That's not what we're talking about. But that's what the Torah says over here. The Torah's brach over here is that if you keep Shemitah, and you keep your evil, and you keep no cheating, and no all that stuff in business, and not hurting people with words. So the Torah says, listen, the land's going to give its fruit. You're going to have a bracha that you'll be full. In other words, you'll eat little, but you'll have full. And then the Torah says, then you're going to be secure on the land. Then you'll be able to live properly. Okay. Now he says over here like this. The people will not suffer famine if they keep the mitzvah of Shemitah and Yovel. And he says that if the Jews will keep the proper mitzvahs of Shemitah and Yovel and all that, Hashem guarantees them that even when you go into exile, nobody's going to steal your land. You'll have the land secure even when you're in exile. The other people won't take away the land. Another thing he says, the Sefornit says, what does it mean? V'yishavtem levetach aleha. Should say v'yishavtem levetach. What do you mean aleha? It means, Hashem says, if you obey the commandments, the land of Eretz Yisrael will be completely self-sufficient. You won't have to go anywhere else to buy things. You won't have to be made in China. It'll be all made in Israel. No, really, that's what it says. Yidden will not be forced to travel abroad to purchase food, because everything will be sustained just in the land of Eretz Yisrael. And that's the bracha that Hashem is giving. Okay, this pasuk is, we discussed this a little bit on Shabbos, but v'chiseimru, now a person's going to ask a question. If you come along and say, manecho bashon ha-shviyas, what are we going to eat in the seventh year? Right? You have Shemitah, no planting. So like we said, the sixth year you finish plant growing things, so you need for the sixth. The seventh year nothing is planted. You plant on the eighth. So you're going to need for 6, 7, and 8. Right? So a person is going to say, Manecho bashana shviyas, what are we going to eat in the 7th year? Heinle nizra, we didn't plant. And we're not going to gather our grains. So what are we going to eat? So the pasuk says, V'tzivisi es b'chasi lachem, I will command my bracha for you. Bashana shishis, in the 6th year. V'asas es atfuh l'shleish shanim. And the grain, the field will produce for 3 years. Now, this pasuk is an unbelievable pasuk. Okay? Number one, the Torah says a person should, v'chiseimru. Okay? Now v'chiseimru, it doesn't only mean if you will ask them, unfortunately, v'chiseimru in Hebrew means when you will ask. Not if you will ask. Simply means, if you will ask. The Mefarshim explained, V'chi Seimru means when you will ask. Manecho Bashon HaShvi'as. But there's a question over here. This pasuk doesn't belong here. This pasuk belongs earlier. When the Torah learned about Shemitah, the beginning of the parsha, before it goes to Yovel. This is a Shemitah question, right? What are we going to eat in the seventh year? So first the Torah spoke to Shemitah. At the end of Shemitah, the Torah should have said this pasuk, these two psukim. What are you going to eat? And Hashem said, I'll give you a lot of food. Instead, the Torah waits until after Yovel, until after the Lords are cheating the business, and all of a sudden the guy wakes up, oh, by the way, what are we going to eat? I mean, the question belongs earlier. And Bechlau, so anyway, it's a long thing, it's getting late, but the Rebbe explains like this. The question is like you said, Ki Yishalcha Vincha, right, when your kid will ask the question, Ki Yishalcha Vincha Macha Lema Mazes, so Rashi says, it's the Shaila of a Ben Chacham. Okay? I spoke to Sikha Shabbos, but not too many of you were here. The Rebbe's question was, the person's question by Yovel is not how are we going to eat, because the Jew believes the Maimid B'chaya Elam V'Zareya. A Jew believes in God and plants the field. The question is not God, what are we going to eat? The question is an intellectual question. How are you going to feed us? Not are you going to feed us? A Jew knows for sure God is going to take care of you. Keep mitzvahs. God is not going to let you homeless and hunger. The question of the Jew over here is, Manechel, how are you going to feed us the seventh year? Meaning, are you going to give us man? Maybe. What did the Jews do in the desert? Right? They had no fields to plant. So how did Hashem take care of them? He gave them the man. Now Hashem says no fields planting. The question of the Jew is, 1 minute. God, I just want to understand. I'm not questioning how are we going to eat. That's for sure is going to happen. I want to understand what's going to happen in the Shemitah year. Okay? Or for that matter, in the Yovel year. The question is, are you going to give us man? Is it going to rain man from heaven? How are you going to take care of us? So Hashem says, what I'm going to do is show you something spectacular. I'm not going to do a miracle. I'm not going to do a miracle to give you the man. What I'm going to do is, I'm going to take the sixth year, which is the weakest of the years. Normally farmers plant a year, rest a year, plant a year, rest a year. So we imagine, Meir Nevuchim, the Rambam Meir Nevuchim, in his famous Guide to the Perplexed, says the whole Kanta Shemitah to give the earth a rest. So the Mefoshim ask the Alshich, and they all ask on the Rambam, what are you talking about? If that's the case, then it should be every 3 years, every 2 years. And not only that, what's the Torah saying by Shemitah? In the sixth year, which is the weakest,
double.
The weakest, not double, triple or sometimes four times the amount, if there's a Yovel. If it's the Yovel, it's triple or sometimes 4 years. Yeah? So what is Hashem telling the Jews? Hashem says to the Jews, listen, I want you to understand something. There's a greater thing than just making the man fall. I'm going to show you that when you keep mitzvahs, nature will produce, when it doesn't make sense that things should grow, barely for that year, let alone for 3-4 years. Hashem says, I'm going to show you a miracle, not a miracle. I'm going to show you that when you keep mitzvahs, nature itself, when it seemingly doesn't make sense, the world itself is going to give you an abundance. What does it mean? The Rebbe learns in the spiritual sense. I spoke to Shabbos, but not too many, like I said, very few of you guys were here. And whatever.
Moshe, were you in light.
Yeah, he was here, and he was here. You weren't there.
I was under the table.
It means like this. A Jew, in the weakest times, spiritually now, let's go spiritual. Golos, dark, dreary, cold, you know, the atmosphere is awful. A Jew comes along and says to God, how is it going to happen? How is Mashiach going to be able to come? Manoichel, what are we going to eat? How can the Mashiach come in the seventh year? I mean, the seventh year represents Mashiach's era, right? How are we going to have what to eat when the earth is so weak, meaning the world is so dark? So Hashem says, let me tell you something. Dafke in the sixth year. Dafke in the hardest of times. Dafke in the coldest of times. In the darkest, coldest, dreariest of times. I'm going to give you such a bracha that you're going to be able to eat in the Mashiach era. You guys are going to be able to bring Mashiach more than the earlier years when the earth was stronger, when things were better. That's what the Pasuk is saying over here. Hashem is, so the question is, not God, are you going to take care of us? The question is, like, not if I could do it, how I should do it. Just tell me how to do it, not if I could do it. For sure the person says we could do it. But this is a question of Torah. Torah says a Jew needs to ask this question. And it's not a lack of belief. Because if not, the Torah wouldn't put it here. It's not a bad question. The Torah says, v'chisayimu, when you're going to ask, what are we going to eat? Mean the Torah says, this is a question I want you to ask. A Jew has a right to demand to Hashem, you know, we need to be taken care of. We're your kids. You need to take care of us. But the question over here is, if a Jew would come along and say, how do you expect us to eat in the seventh year when it's such a difficult time? So Hashem said, Dafke, our generation is going to be Mashiach, and they couldn't. Either were much greater than us, because only through Mesiras Nefesh, self-sacrifice, which is more when we don't see God, and when it's dark outside, then we'll be able to produce more than in the times of the Beis HaMikdash, in the times of Moshe Rabbeinu, and all that. So the question is, how is that possible? So besides the fact it says through Mesiras Nefesh we could reach a level that they couldn't reach, it says in the Zayar, and the Pasuk, Meisha Anav Me'ed Mikol Adam Asher Pnei Adama, the Meisha was the most humblest, he speak like Yeshiva Bacher. Meisha was the humblest Jew that ever lived. Yeah? It says in the Zayar, he was most humble when he saw the generation right before Mashiach. When Meisha Rabbeinu saw our generation, that is dark and no miracles and no nothing, no only tzaddis, and the Jews still do Torah mitzvahs, Meisha Rabbeinu felt inferior. He didn't feel that he's on the same level as the Jews in Mesiras Nefesh. And that's why it says that the marshal that which is given in Sfarim, Chassidus brings it down a lot, there's an analogy of a midget and a giant. A giant can see very far. A midget can't. But when you put the midget on top of the giant, the midget sees farther than the giant does. We're midgets, they were giants, but we're not standing on our own. We're standing on top of them. Especially when we have an advantage that they didn't have. They didn't have Mesiras Nefesh, and we do. So this is what the Torah says. In the sixth year, in the worst of times, it's going to be the best. Okay, next week...